Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Good morning, everybody. What do we call this? Happy Halloween Eve?
Sure.
So people are getting their...
But you don't celebrate Halloween.
I don't, no. I think it's a silly holiday.
Should I come in costume by myself tomorrow?
You can if you want.
Because I don't think Bill is... I doubt Bill, and I honestly doubt Joe would.
Oh, I think Joe might. Joseph
Pecky?
Yeah. Although he's sort of always in costume. He's got the hat backward. He's like, you know, and you have sort of that theme with your costume this year. Got the baseball-y theme.
Yeah, the baseball. Yeah, we're doing a League of Their Own.
Yeah, and I saw the picture, the family picture. That's awesome. That's sort of the Halloween that I would celebrate. But I do have problems with the over-decorating, the over-lighting. And that's what I've said for years now. Adults have ruined Halloween. They have ruined it. Because it used to be a kid's thing. Parents would kick you out the door. You had like a pillowcase, empty pillowcase. Mm-hmm. You'd stuff that sucker. If you filled it up, you come back, stuff it again. You'd have trades for candy. Parents, now they got a separate, I'm stealing a lot of this material from a bit I saw. They're taking out the nuts. They're taking out the candy. They don't want you to eat. It's like, you know, dentists are away. Shut up. You ruined Halloween for us.
You're really, I thought you were going to do this rant tomorrow.
I'm going to.
Okay, so we're going to do it again tomorrow?
I'm going to play something. If I get the permission from my partner and Jazz, our lovely producer, I'm going to play it tomorrow. It's a longer bit, but it spells out exactly my thoughts on Halloween.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot more important things to talk about in the world we're living in, including I did not see this coming. When the president was off doing what presidents do, traveling around the world, a change in, like, nuclear strategy.
Via social media.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing where it's like, well, is this actually happening? Or is this kind of just a floating the idea out there? And what does it actually mean? So, of course, we were talking about the fact that shortly before his meeting with China's Xi Jinping, President Trump announced that the U.S. would start testing nuclear weapons after a 30-year hiatus. The last time was 1992 for us.
Yeah.
In his Truth Social, Truthy? What do we call those?
Post.
We have more nuclear weapons than anybody. We don't do testing, but with others doing testing, I think it's appropriate that we do also.
Yeah, and he's sort of referencing, Russia's doing some testing on some of their missiles that would be the launch vehicle, launch platform.
They're not testing nuclears. They're testing...
The launch platforms.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's not that, it seems like it's not very clear on whether he's referring to nuclear weapons tests or a test of nuclear capable weapons system.
Yeah. But again, the superficiality of what he's talking about.
And I just, you know, it was interesting because the context of this happening now, which again, I think a lot of people didn't necessarily see it coming, but there's also a part of like, did he watch House of Dynamite?
Right.
Like, did he just, on one of his flights back, like, on Air Force One, was like, flipped on some Netflix and watched Idris Elba be the president?
For folks who don't know, kind of walk through what that is.
So, House of Dynamite is a new movie on Netflix. I don't know if it broke records, but it was streamed a
very
lot.
Very popular, yeah.
It was also in the theaters. And it is Kathryn Bigelow, who you might know from Hurt Locker and...
Academy Award winning
Zero Dark 30.
Yep.
So, it is basically, in three parts... what could happen if a unknown, I forgot, like basically we in the situation, I don't want to give any spoilers away.
Yeah.
There is a nuclear warhead headed towards Chicago.
Right.
And what are the decisions and who are the decision makers in that scenario?
How do we react?
How do we react? What capabilities do we have to knock it down? And so kind of giving an idea of what that could look like for most of us who have no idea what that could look like. And so there is a part of us like, is that where this came from? Is that he watched this movie as 20 million some people did in the last week?
Yeah, it's like sort of the I see a squirrel. It's like, whoa, also my attention's over on nuclear weapons.
But it is.
When
I mean,
wasn't
you haven't
before.
Seen it yet, right?
I have not seen it yet. I will. I'm going to watch it this weekend, actually.
There's mixed reviews as far as I think people have issues with the ending. I really liked it. It's because it's something that I think most, especially people my age, do not think about.
No.
Right? Like, and it's interesting because I think early September there was a New Yorker article called Why Don't We Take Nuclear Weapons Seriously? And it kind of looked back at during the Cold War, obviously, when that was a constant threat. And I'm sure you had drills growing up, getting under the desk as if that would really help.
60s.
But people my age and younger despite this being a massive existential threat that the capabilities have only gotten better, it's almost like we put it in our minds that it could ever happen.
So why do you think that is? You can speak for your generation.
Well, I think it isn't the media, the PSAs, we just don't think about it. I think we take for granted that everyone's just been in a situation, like we're like this like handshake deal that we're not going to use them. They exist. There's a lot of them, but you just can't even fathom what it would look like for them to actually be deployed.
So here's where I want to take the audience side of this, because I question this president's sort of starting to look at this issue in the way that he's approaching it. Now, I will say this before we go to break. I think it is proper for any president or even this president to say, what's the state of our nuclear program? Are we doing what we're supposed to be doing to maintain it? Are the safeguards in place? That's a different conversation, I think, than some of the things he's talking about. But I'd love to know from all of you, Kristen alluded to it, your generation, my generation, vastly different on the threats or at least the awareness of nuclear war and what might happen. And we know the world's, I think it's safe to say this, it's anecdotal, I guess, but it's a more dangerous place. Terrorism has sort of replaced what we just had, conflicts between countries. Now we have like this worldwide terror network with the Al-Qaeda's and other groups. I think there's certainly a risk of some rogue agency or organization getting their hands on nuclear weapons. So why don't you, and this is for you, the audience and listeners and fans, do you take this seriously? Is this a threat? Are you worried that this president is basically saying, we need to open up this box again and start looking at how we do things and how we test things and should we start blowing up nuclear bombs to see how they work? Because there's risks associated with that, and you don't have to look any further than the places that we've done this at, which are now off limits for human habitation. So there's risk to all of this stuff. What do you think? 855-616-1620. Interesting show today, because we're going to spend some time on this. And then we have Josh Shulman, candidate for governor, Republican side, joining us on the phone at 1035. And then we have our always on Thursday, Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. We'll talk through all of the local stories. So busy day. But welcome your input, 855-616-1620. She's Kristen. I'm Steve. Point taken. Thursday edition, pre-Halloween edition on 620 WTMJ.
Time to duck and cover, the bombs are coming down. A radiation shower will pour throughout your town. Hands over your head,
deep low to the ground.
Time to duck and cover, the bombs are coming down.
Oh yeah, duck and cover, the old thing that school kids across America had to do.
Rolling. Do you ever have like vivid memories of it?
Not vivid, but I do remember early on, very, very young, doing stuff like that. And whether it was called duck and cover or something else, I don't remember. But I mean, that was the reality because we didn't know, right? Cold War, all that stuff. Lots of text on this from Jim. Testing nukes, actual warheads. Take King Trump at his word. Yes, he demanded they take down the East Wing immediately with no regards to permits or committees. True. He demanded an explosion of ICE officers who deliberately used violence to disappear people. True. The cruelty is the point, right? So, yeah, he'll test actual nuke warheads. Still to be determined, but that is certainly the threat that's out there. This one from the 414. Don't want this president anywhere near nuclear weapons and his minions. That would be sort of my take. Maybe not put that way, but I have said for a while that I don't believe that many of the support positions, the cabinet secretaries, the staff of this president are not ready for prime time. They're untested. Many of them have not worked in their areas, supposed areas of expertise. Previously, they've sort of been thrown into it. The Kash Patels, the Pete Hegseths of the world, the Kristi Noem. You can make an argument Kristi Noem was a governor, so maybe. But just they don't seem to have what it takes, in my opinion. Now, other people love their work. Because they're confrontational. They sort of mimic or echo what the president does in every live presser. They antagonize the press. They criticize the press, which has always been the case, but not to this degree. I guess my concern about this issue is one, again, and I'm going to keep using the term because I believe in it. If you look at things superficially, it's sort of a feel good. I'm taking care of business. I'm going to defend. But then the layers down from that, where you actually have people that know what they're talking about. Nuclear weapons experts. I'm not sure we have those.
I think that's like, it'll be interesting because I'm sure we're going to talk about this with Joe and Bill tomorrow. Joe, for me, just knows way more about the military and a lot of the protocols and stuff than I've ever known. And so to a certain extent, it's the part for me is weird. It's like, you're doing, again, just like making a decision and blasting it out via Truth Social. But the actual nuances and what goes into a test, like a nuclear testing program. I don't know enough about it to be like, this is standard. We should do this. We should have never stopped. I don't know enough about this to be like, this is a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, trust me, we're going to find some
experts.
It's
interesting as far as where we are with our relationships, because I think one of the things that Trump prides himself on is his relationship and his ability to negotiate with Russia, with China. He wanted to meet with North Korea again in this Asia trip. And so it seems like something that I don't want to comment and fearmonger because I don't know enough about what this actually looks like. It just is another example of, oh, we're doing this now. And I found out because of social media.
Yeah, because of a social media post. And like I've said before, whether a president can utilize that in a presidential manner, still to be determined. I thought early in his tenure, Barack Obama was pretty influential, and his team used those platforms still in the relatively early stages of the Twitters and stuff when they actually was, I think, some meaningful content there. But the way that this president is utilizing this stuff, and one of the texts refers to it, you know, the saber rattling, we're the toughest, you know, kid on the street, you know, sort of using that analogy. Texter says this, keep the briefcase away from him. That is a concern by a lot of people, that this president doesn't have the skill set to determine what is a risk and a not risk when it comes to making that decision to utilize nuclear weapons. And that's a fear that I think a lot of people would have.
Is there anyone in the cabinet that you were like, well, I trust them? Like Susie Wiles, do you think you trust her?
She's chief of staff. I mean,
how influential do you think she is in a situation
apparently
like
very,
that?
According to like Bill McCoshins of the world, apparently very. And I said yesterday in our group text that I hope she's sort of corralling some of this stuff. I do have some respect for Marco Rubio, Secretary of State. I think he gets it.
Doesn't he have like three jobs right now?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, mostly Secretary of State.
Probably a problem. I think that maybe he can be the smartest guy in the room. I wonder and worry that whatever he meant in his social media post, Truth Social post, I'm not sure that we're qualified or even anyone out there is qualified enough to know what that means until he really tells us what it means. Is it an actual testing of a device or is it just testing the safeguards in the system? Big fan of the latter, not a big fan of the first. This is from the 262. Good morning. Have you noticed that when President Trump is giving interviews on Air Force One, he's standing just outside the washroom, just wondering. He does always lean on that door.
Does he? I have never noticed
that. Yeah. Trust me, we haven't gotten into this, and it's sort of gossipy, so I probably wouldn't. But he has had some interesting physical challenges lately, which I think are concerning, because what do we spend a lot of the latter part of the Biden administration talking about
his health,
cognitive abilities, his health, his just sort of removing himself from the conversation, and he was president. This president, to his credit, is not hiding.
He certainly has not removed himself from the conversation.
No, but he's put himself in some really sort of embarrassing situations. There's some questions about some of the medical things that are happening with him. Those stories are all going to be, you know, fleshed out at some point. Again, what I would concern myself with on this issue, we have a leader in the Department of Defense, Pete Hegseth. Yeah, that's what he calls it. But there's really, the official designation hasn't changed because Congress has to change it. Mm. I think that there's concerns there that he's qualified to make any decision with the president on this issue. I am not a fan of Donald Trump. I think you all know that. I don't know that he's qualified in any way to make informed decisions on stuff like this. And this is about as big as it gets, right? We've seen it in movies, certainly over the years. We've talked about the duck and cover days. This is as serious as it gets. And when this president wants to go there, it sort of amps up everybody's attention and probably their concerns over where we are headed in this sort of world conversation about peace.
And why now?
And why now? Because there's enough other stuff going on. We'll continue the conversation after this. Steve and Kristen on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. We've been talking about all this all week, Kristen, and I'm not referring to potential nuclear war.
We've not been talking about that all week. That's brand new.
No, but we have a new newsletter, the only newsletter, I think, that comes out of WT. Is it the only
for
one?
For now?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
There has not been a big push for newsletters in the past, but we are breaking ground, as they say, and launching our newsletter, Extra Points, a play on Point Taken, that comes out this Sunday.
Yeah, so we've been
Working on it all week.
Yeah, playing around, like, trying to put the best content in there. The great thing about it is, besides the fact that it'll link back to some of our big conversations, some of the big topics we talked about, with easy to follow links, you can just click and boom, you're right there. Stuff that I think really, really hits during the week of shows. But more importantly, our podcast work. We just launched another episode today on You Need to Listen about, are we meeting in the middle on politics, or should we, or could we? So that's a really interesting one that's available now wherever you get your podcast. You Need to Listen. But also, for example, we haven't announced it yet, but there's an event coming. We're going to do a live remotes. That's coming up in a few weeks.
We're going to do a trivia night for Capco Kids.
Yeah, that's coming up. So all of these events will be listed there. And also, because we love the text line, this is a way for you to provide feedback or commentary or topic ideas or guest ideas from you to us. And I think there's already almost a couple thousand subscribers, mm-hmm. which is very cool. So if you'd like to do that, easy way, text the word extra, E-X-T-R-A, to 855-616-1620. You get the link, subscribe, couple questions, quick questions, your name, your email, and your zip code. I think that's it.
Yep.
And then Sunday morning, boom.
As you're watching the morning shows.
And the Packers game.
Yeah,
which is noon Sunday against Carolina Panthers, which I'm chalking it up to should be an easy victory.
Well, we said that about, who was the one that was like, how is this the score
Cleveland
right now?
Browns,
Cleveland Browns, yeah. Yes.
That one hurt my soul. But things happen. Anyway, after the break, my friend Josh Shulman, who's running for governor of the state of Wisconsin on the Republican side, will join us. Lots of questions asked him about, including recent polling that's come out on the governor's race, which says nobody knows anybody, apparently, in politics. Maybe we're paying too much attention. All right, rocking it on a Thursday, free Halloween on 620 WTMJ. Point Taken is where you're at. Kristen Bry, Steve Scafidi, thanks for listening as always. If you miss any or all of our show or our great interviews, one of which is coming up next, you can find them all at WTMJ.com or wherever you get your podcast. Point Taken is the search term that you need to use. All right. He is the lead elected in Washington County. He is the county executive, Josh Shulman, candidate for the Republican nomination for governor, who joins us on the hotline. Good morning, county executive.
Good morning. Happy Friday Eve for those who celebrate.
Halloween Eve. That's what we were talking about. I'm assuming what are your kids going to be for Halloween, Josh?
Well, my oldest son is a senior in high, or youngest son is a senior in high school, and he just went out, I think, dressed up as a hunter. So okay. I don't know if that qualifies, but you know, he's 17, so last hurrah.
You mentioned hunting. Have you been out in the woods during the bow season?
I have, thank goodness. I was actually out last night and just loving some time in God's nature. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it is a fun time of year, and I know that we have the gun deer season coming up in a couple of weeks. All right, so let's get to it. One of the takeaways that a lot of us who talk about politics took away from the MU Law School poll is Wisconsin voters don't seem to know any of the candidates for governor. What's your take on all of that?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we go from one election to the next and it never stops. I hear that everywhere I go in the state, and people are exhausted. So I'm not surprised that they don't know a lot about what's going on. And let's admit it. That's not all bad. In our form of government, we want government to just function normally, and people can live their lives and pursue their own American dream. And that's fortunately what they're doing in many cases. That is the case in Washington County, maybe not so much in Madison or Washington, D.C.
So, Josh, how do you change that? What's the plan to get more people to know who you are?
Yeah, it's a slow and steady burn, right? I mean, that's why I jumped in the race so long ago now. It's been almost 190 days. May 4th was our launch, and it's just slow and steady. I mean, we want to get out and meet people where they're at as best we can, press flesh and burn tire rubber. It's what the most successful Republican candidates in Wisconsin history have done, because it's the kind of candidacy that people in Wisconsin like. They want to talk to their candidates face-to-face. They don't want to get bombarded with text messages and digital ads and all those mailers that, you know, eventually everybody throws in the recycling bin anyway. And that's the kind of race we're running. So, you know, I've made it across all 72 counties in 127 days. I'm on my second go around, 25 counties in. We'll make it 26 tonight. We'll just keep on burning and meeting as many people as we can and raising as much money as we can.
So we haven't been at those events, but what are you telling the voters of Wisconsin and all those 72 counties about you? What's the qualifier? What's the uniqueness?
Yeah, I think this is something that really shows itself in that poll, is that people are being introduced to me for the first time. You know, I certainly wasn't surprised that a congressman who represents an eighth of the entire state of Wisconsin, his numbers were where they were, and mine were where mine are. Washington County is the 10th largest county in the state, but it only represents about 140,000 people. So, you know, a percentage point or two of the whole entire state. So, you know, it is very much introducing myself as a Christian first, the son of a minister and my mother a registered nurse, my wife and I owning an 80-acre farm in just east of West Bend, and being the county executive and what we've accomplished in Washington County together by working together and communicating with one another, even when we don't agree on things. We're certainly in the midst of that in our budget process. I think we need more of that in both Washington and in Madison, and that's what I plan to do when I'm governor in January of 2027.
You alluded to your opponent on the Republican side, Congressman Tom Tiffany. What's the biggest difference, starkest difference between you and the congressman?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, one thing that we share in common, I think, is we're both good, just Wisconsin nice guys. But, you know, something that separates us, I think, is my executive experience. Being in the 10th largest county in the state, I think that's a real differentiator. In particular, the buck stops with me. You know, it's not just casting yes or no votes and, you know, kind of throwing the political bombs back and forth, which often happens in legislative branches, but you actually have to convene people together and execute on whatever policies are in place. So that has been something I've done and been proud of our track record. And then also not just convening people, but then leading and setting a vision for the course of the future. I believe strongly in working together. That's why I went across the state, all 72 counties, building a shared vision. I think that's what it takes to lead and win. I have a track record of doing that, and I think that's something different, not just on the primary side, but I think it'll be a real differentiator in the general election.
Switching gears a little bit, Josh, as far as the upcoming delayed benefits happening on November 1st. So we had a food bank executive director on the show yesterday. I spent the afternoon at Journal Sentinel interviewing food bank executive directors from Waukesha County, Ozaukee County, no one from Washington County. But one of the things that stuck with me from the Ozaukee County was that, you know, it's a very wealthy county, and thus it's a very hard place to be poor. And so what are some of the challenges for your constituents who do live maybe just above the poverty line and are going to be needing that extra boost in food banks? So what are some of the proactive measures you're doing in Washington County for those constituents?
Yeah, that's great questions. And of course, Washington County is a little bit different than Ozaukee as far as we're a bit more of a blue collar community. We have, you know, some real challenges. Homelessness is a big one, and, you know, food banks in general. Fortunately, we have a lot of very generous people as well. But the expiration of food benefits is a huge issue and a huge concern. Our Aging Disability Resource Center is leading a food drive right now, as I've seen in other communities across southeast Wisconsin, to help promote the need that's going to exist come November 1st. But I think the big thing here is it just proves and points to the dysfunction that we're seeing out of Washington, D.C., and, you know, which isn't terribly different than what we see out of Madison, unfortunately. And it's wonderful to see people pulling together, whether it's in Milwaukee County, like I've seen, whether it's in Waukesha County or here in Washington, helping one another and giving each other a hand up.
Washington County Executive Josh Shulman, candidate for governor of the state of Wisconsin, joining us on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. You mentioned sort of the problems that we're seeing in Washington and to some degree in the state of Wisconsin about coming together, both sides. On the shutdown, I grow tired of both sides just taking lobbing grenades at each other. For Republicans, is the Democrats are holding us up. Democrats saying, well, they have the power. That's all great. And that's, you know, makes for great TV. And everybody loves to be on TV and radio and yak their heads off pretending they know what's going on or they're in charge. But generally on the shutdown, solving this thing is sort of important, and you're known as an action, not a talker, an action county executive. You get things done. You've done some interesting things across the aisle. How would you approach the shutdown?
Well, I think the first thing is bringing people together to the table, and that has been something that I'm particularly frustrated with. I mean, legislators aren't even going to D.C., so it's hard to have conversation when we're not even seeing our elected leaders in the Capitol where they're supposed to be working. But look, I think if you look at what I've done in Washington County, even when we disagree on things, and here's a really great example, our UW campus closes. The UW announces they're pulling out. We've got a 60-year investment in that property, in that building. What are we going to do in the future? There are a lot of people who were concerned, wanted to see us continue some kind of college track. That's not realistic. We brought a task force together. Then, even in the midst of making a decision, we bought all the people who had concerns into a room and heard them out. I mean, that is part of what we ought to be doing, even when we don't agree. I think we spend way too much time in Wisconsin and in America in general lobbing bombs back and forth, talking past each other and not talking to each other. It's why one of my favorite things to do during county fairs, at the very end, after I've worked the Republican booth and walked through the barns and talking to the kids, I go to the Democrat booth and I talk to them about what their issues and concerns are, what their hopes and dreams for the future are. We have a lot more that holds us together than tears us apart. We need to remember that, and we need leaders who will act and show that, model the way.
You mentioned the sale of the Washington County campus, UWM campus. Was that a loss for the county? Did you get top dollar? Because we've had some texters and listeners say, well, we took a beating on that. What's your take?
Well, it's definitely a loss. Losing the university is a massive loss for us. And now we're seeing it play out over and over and over in communities all across the state. And, you know, mark my words, this isn't the end. We're in the middle of all of this. So that is a huge loss in and of itself. That was totally a situation then of making lemonades out of lemon. I mean, there was no scenario, realistically speaking, where a four-year institution was going to take over that campus. I feel really good about where we're landing with Ozaukee Christian School. I have my own concerns about how the funding formulas work and how vouchers are funded and all those things. And that's what we heard predominantly at our listening session. That's a separate issue that in 2027 I plan to address as governor. But for the purposes of that building and that property, with the partnership between Ozaukee Christian School, the county, and also Cedar Lake Conservation Foundation in the county, I really feel great about the good taste of lemonade that we made out of some pretty bitter lemons handed to us by the university.
Washington County Executive Josh Shulman, let's continue the conversation as the campaign moves forward. I always appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for having me back. Have a great weekend, everybody. God bless.
All right. He is one of the two candidates on the Republican side as of this moment for the Republican nomination for governor. We'll take a break. She's Chris and I'm Steve. Lots more to get to on Point Taken on Thursday right here on 620 WTMJ. We're running behind a little bit, but we'll catch up. Some of the other takeaways from the MU Law School poll.
Did anything surprise you?
No, I mean, even the issues seem like they've sort of realigned to make sense for, you know, Wisconsin voters and constituents of the state. I think that makes sense. I wasn't surprised by the federal shutdown numbers, like who to blame. I mean, Republicans are in charge, so they're going to get most of it. A lot of people don't like data centers.
I think that was the thing that I think is the most interesting, because I wrote about this a couple weeks ago for Journal Sentinel, is that the data center question to me does not fall, and this, the poll proves it, right? It doesn't fall neatly on a right versus left issue, that there's bipartisan majority do not think that the cost, that there's more cost than there is benefits to these things. So I think it's going to be really interesting how candidates talk about it next year, because it could, depending on which person you're talking to, it's not necessarily going to be a home run just because they're typically a Republican or typically a Democrat.
Yeah, and that issue has been dumbed down because there's a lot of conversation about water. They use a lot of water, but they also return a lot of water. The big one for me is protecting the energy costs and prices for local users, individual families, when you have this mega user who's going to drain those resources. Yeah. That has to be talked about more. And built into all these contracts has to be protection for the individual energy consumer.
But I think it also then becomes the promotion of nuclear energy, right? Because we know that UW-Madison is one of the leaders in nuclear research. And so do you, getting a candidate's opinions on how much you accelerate that program and try to fund that so that can be a new energy source to power these huge data centers?
Yeah, that story is going to happen.
I think it's
going to
be fascinating. It's more technical, so I don't know how you're going to campaign on it.
We got to jazz
it up. But it's
something
that it really matters.
Absolutely. She's Chris and I'm Steve. Another quick break here on 620. All right, we only got a little bit of time before we go to the top of the hour news, and Julia Fellow will be providing that important update for all of you, and as well as ABC. So what would you like to talk about in the remaining 20 seconds?
Apparently, I have a very expressive face.
Do you?
Someone said, I enjoy watching Steve and Kristen on YouTube. They both have expressive faces, particularly Kristen.
I guess that's...
So if you would like to see our expressive face, you can always watch us on the YouTube live stream. Just text WATCH to 855-616-1620.
And we don't talk about this a lot, and this is certainly patting ourselves on the back, but most of our stuff is like the most viewed, most listened to on this station. So there's a reason for that. One, it's great content, but two, good-looking partner.
Because you're so handsome.
Good-looking partner. I was giving you the compliment, but thank you for that, if it was well-intentioned and well-meant. All right.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Hello, welcome back to the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken. It is Thursday, Halloween Eve, and we are joined by Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee, who has some breaking news. You hustled over.
I'm always hustling over because I'm a last-minute person.
That's insane. I recognize that behavior. But what do you got for us?
We do have news. So it's not white smoke because we knew the police association and the city of Milwaukee had agreed to a new labor agreement. But the police department or the police association, the union for rank and file police department members, revealed the terms of that agreement. And two things of note, I guess. One, it's a 15% raise over 4 years. And if you're a close follower, you've just noticed what the second key thing is. They've tacked an additional year onto this agreement. So instead of immediately having to go back to the bargaining table at the start of 2026,
smart.
There's now until 2027. I don't have any details at this point on like work rules, how vacation's calculated, how healthcare is. And for a union of like 1,600 active members, that's a big factor, those type of things. So those will come. But the big things we do know, the 15% raise, it includes full retroactive pay. So it's not like all the officers, well, essentially they will on January 1st get a 15% raise, but they really got a raise going back to 2023. Right. And so they're going to get a check reflecting a bunch of progressive raises to get to that point. Looking at the figures the police association revealed, they actually sought over 3 years an even bigger raise than that with full retroactive pay. And this is a 15% compounded raise. So all those raises add up to 15%, compound 15%. They sought almost 16% raise over 3 years. The city offered something like 9% and no retroactive pay. So it seems like they really did compromise. They added a year. They got full retroactive pay, but they got a little bit less of a total pay increase.
My question is always this. I know that there's always, because I was involved in these at a local level in Oak Creek, there's always these back and forths and there's always contention and, you know, both sides are, you know, claiming they're the, you know, either the victims or the winners, whatever. I don't want to get into winners and losers, but the question always comes to me, why are you able to do this now when you could have done this last year? It's like, I understand there's the back and forth, but and this thing has dragged out for a long time.
There were two, I'd say, major factors. Both sides agreed, well, so the agreement expired when the clock struck midnight on the end of 2022. Knowing the city's fiscal position at that point in the Act 12 debate, this what became Act 12, the sales tax debate, they agreed not to negotiate during that period, that they jointly went to Madison and got more money. The police association also got protections for itself in hiring more police officers, but that was something the mayor said he supported. They then went back to the negotiating table. Well, then what happened is the city's labor negotiator unfortunately died from a long-term illness.
That's right. Yeah.
Then the city couldn't find a new labor negotiator, and I'm not exactly sure what happened there, but the city ended up, Mayor Cavalier Johnson ended up appointing his chief of staff, Nick Desiato, to take the role. That seemed to be a little bit of a protectionist measure because they had to actually come to the table. They needed to actually get to the table, so they needed to send someone. They finally went back to Nicole Fleck as the labor negotiator, who was the labor negotiator before the Veronica, who unfortunately died.
That one answer you just provided gave me all the detail I needed. With the detail, like names, I don't have that detail. I'm pretty sure you don't either. That's why Jeremy's here.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The local coverage.
Just has it. You can reach back to the back of
well
your brain.
Well done. And a great answer.
And
it makes sense.
Details. All right. So how, I think the next big question is, what kind of impact does this make on Milwaukee's financial situation?
There's two big impacts to look at. One, the city's going to have to, and I'm looking at the fire department's contract, the Professional Firefighters Association, that was agreed to earlier this year's kind of guidelines on how this will go. That agreement included for a back pay. All these checks had to be issued within a set like 60 or 90 days. So the city's going to have to somehow find millions of dollars quickly and issue this back pay. There's also going to be the cost increase going forward. Now, the cost increase going forward, I think 15%, we can all, over 4 years, we can all agree is a pretty reasonable amount. Might even be less than inflation when you really do the math. The city will have to absorb that in every single budget going forward, but that was a known thing. It was coming. There's also, Nick Kovac has hinted, I haven't really gone digging, Nick Kovac's the budget director, the city has kind of been preparing some reserve funds in anticipation of this day. If it did have to issue these checks, but the worst case scenario is the city would have to go issue 10-year bonds to pay this contingent borrowing to pay these debts.
But as you started, we now are at least assured that through 2027 or beginning in 2027?
Through 2026.
Okay, so through next year. At least we have that line that we can start thinking about the next contract, but it gives us a little bit of wiggle room there. All right, I'm going to just shuffle down because we always, behind the curtain, we always get some topic ideas from Jeremy and we kind of go back and forth. I noticed in the part of the number three, larger preview of budget amendment day, which is Friday, the last piece, city wages, Alderwoman Dmitrievich, what is her comments on city wages?
Mayor Kevler Johnson proposed 2% general city worker increase. And what is general city workers? It's everyone but police and fire because Act 10 protects those two groups of collective bargaining. So Mayor Kevler Johnson said, we'll give you 2% across the board.
Mm-hmm.
She says, we'll actually give you 2 plus 1% plus 1. And that is an additional 1%. So everyone's getting 3. And then if you're a city resident, they'll boost the city residency incentive from 3% to 4%.
What's the likelihood that the other older people subscribe to that theory?
She's got support from Common Council President Jose Perez. She also has support from Alderman Peter Bergelis. That's a pretty wide spectrum. So it seems likely to go through. She would pay for a lot of this with property tax increase dollars, more than what the mayor is proposing.
Property tax increase?
Yeah, about a 1% additional increase.
Okay.
All right, he is Jeremy Ginney, UrbanMilwaukee.com. We'll talk about a lot more about that and his great tchotchke story in a second. But we're going to get to some news stories, as we always do when he's in studio with us every Thursday. You're listening, of course, to Point Taken. She's Chris and I'm Steve on 620 WTMJ. Everybody wants to be Jeremy Ginney is his name. He's the
Urban Milwaukee is his game?
Yeah.
And say that?
Because people ask me about this all the time, because people love to buy stuff, you know, the novelty stuff. And I don't know if you're the only game in town when it comes to this. Probably not. But your little tchotchke shop you have.
Is that a demeaning way to refer to it?
Tchotchke?
Do you find that offensive, calling it a tchotchke shop?
It's fair. It's
okay. All right. Just making sure. Looking out for you.
In my business, I'm all about fairness. So.
Yes. All right. So where is this?
Urban Milwaukee, the store, 755 North Milwaukee Street, corner of Milwaukee Mason, kitty corner from Hotel Metro, right over by the Pfister Hotel, all things Milwaukee and Wisconsin pride.
Do you have t-shirts?
Well, we got lots of t-shirts.
That's what I thought. All right. So where do we want to go next?
Let's go to Northridge, the far northwest corner of
the
city.
It's gone!
It's gone. Yeah, there is no more Northridge. There is just a very large hole in the ground, about 58 acres in size, which is massive.
I was going to say, how do you, like, what would you compare that to?
Probably size-wise. Somewhere in the ballpark of, I'm just trying to do some math, like maybe
almost the size of Drexel Town Square.
100 soccer fields?
Yeah.
100 soccer fields. What? That's a lot.
A simple question, but why don't they just backfill the hole with gravel?
That's essentially what's there right now. If you went to look at the site today at the corner of 76th and Brown Deer, you would see large piles of gravel.
Okay, but I mean, I don't want people, because you know what happens with any hole situation, like then there's a lawsuit.
Well, is it not fenced off?
It is fenced off. It's also not.
So was Northridge, and people still broke in.
Fair.
There's nothing to break into anymore. It's a big sloping area. So there's not actually like a pit. Just Northridge, if you drove around it ever, the mall had multiple levels, and that was actually achieved by the ground changing level.
Yeah.
So they are slowly leveling it out. That's what everyone witnessed yesterday, because Mayor Cavalier Johnson was joined by several other city officials to celebrate the end of the mall. It's long gone. He said, this is really, really a tremendous day, not just for the city of Milwaukee, but the entire state of Wisconsin. This site has long stood as a reminder of what once was. Today, though, it stands as a symbol of what can be. And then comes the question of, well, what can it be?
Well, one of the things that I noticed when I was paying attention to what the president was doing overseas, he was talking to Toyota's leadership, apparently. And I've said for a long time, maybe there's a place, because this is how Milwaukee's economy existed for decades in the 50s, 60s, 70s, maybe a little beyond that, where you bring in an automotive manufacturer like Toyota or any of the brands, and you stick them on that site and you hire, I don't know, 8,000 to 10,000 people, giving a working wage. I know that that's not going to happen probably, but why not? I guess I don't understand why not. Think big.
Well, isn't there, I mean, there, the talk is some kind of manufacturing.
That's right? One of the things. So I'll go through the list that was kind of said yesterday. I'm watching this with great interest because there's been this discussion of we're doing this planning process. We're gathering feedback. And the actual narrowing of what the options are doesn't seem to really be happening because what the city really wants is a big fish, it calls a large anchor, to come in and drive everything else. So maybe it's not a car plant, but maybe it's someone that needs 20 acres to do some advanced manufacturing use. So you have an anchor tenant, and then you can build around that, which is really what the city has struggled to find at Century City. That's never happened there. But in the Menominee Valley, you have Falk that was already there. You landed Palermo's Pizza. You have these large employers that the city has then built onto.
I mean, data center would be one of those ones that could get plugged in, but there's no jobs there, really.
The mayor was asked about data centers, and he immediately compared it to Mount Pleasant, where the Microsoft plant is, right, and then the new OpenAI Oracle thing in Port Washington. He goes, this site isn't big enough, and he's factually accurate there. For those, he didn't rule out data centers, which surprised me because of the job density concern. But there is a big movement. I have a friend in Chicago who's working closely on this, of smaller data centers, but often in more urban environments. So this probably is too much in the middle. It's not urban, but it's not a large greenfield site in the suburbs.
So is there any offers? Like, has there been, like, what does the process look like for this? Is it going out and shopping and like, hey, we have this space available? Or is it more of a lead interest of companies coming to them knowing that it's available?
There will be, in the coming months, I've been promised, or maybe even coming weeks, essentially a redevelopment plan. What I was expecting it to have was like, we're going to put streets in here, we're going to do exactly this. That's not what it'll be, but it will include a market study that was completed, the state helped fund that. And that will essentially help to attract tenants, they hope. The city is working with the WEDC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, and M7, the arm of the MMAC that recruits businesses to the 7-county area. So this site will be on the list of sites they kind of pitched to these big employers that come looking. The city said it's also, and the city being Mayor Cavalier-Johnson and Commissioner Lafayette Crum, they're going to start doing outreach to more employers, but they confirmed they don't have anything in the works right now in terms of a tenant. They suggested everything from youth sports to healthcare could be that anchor. So if you think like a massive youth sports facility that's a regional or statewide draw, I think that's kind of what they're suggesting there. But it's still a blue sky
thing. Is there
an
example of that, of like another place that has something like that that's been successful?
I can think of one in Minnesota for sure, okay, where there's like a massive soccer kind of hub that everyone goes to from across the Midwest. I know Indianapolis has positioned itself very well using more indoor facilities with its convention center to draw people in from across the Midwest.
My fear is that someone will try to push retail in the spot that had retail, and I don't know that that's going to be the answer here.
I think that's certainly true. And they're actually, speaking to the former mayor of Oak Creek, one of the things the mayor of Milwaukee and Commissioner Lafayette Crump said they did is they went down to Drexel Town Square and they looked at what really worked there in terms of public space, tenant mix,
yep,
mixing housing in there. And that's important for the city because the city has certainly all kinds of mixed use neighborhoods, but this is a more suburban context than is common in the city.
Yeah. Great. If they have a great plan and great execution, it can succeed. It just has to be well thought of. And I'm happy you just said that about Oak Creek because that's what we did. We went to other places. I went on one of the trips, but we had lots of visits to other places that were doing these types of things and we just cherry picked the best. And so far it's worked. So hopefully that Milwaukee will be on that same course of action and research. All right. Lots more to get to with Jerry Magine of UrbanMilwaukee.com after this on 620 WTMJ. Talking all things City of Milwaukee and maybe a little beyond, as we just mentioned Oak Creek in the previous segment. Jerry Magine, UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find their great writing, all things local news, which is one of the reasons we do this feature every Thursday, because people ask us, what's going on in Milwaukee? In depth. And this guy, Jeremy Janine, who's sitting right across from me and right adjacent to Kristen, knows his you-know-what when it comes to Milwaukee. Is that a safe assumption?
I think that is a safe assumption.
All right.
What do we call it? A PSA. All right. Good PSA to yes, have you here every Thursday. All right. It's funny. We talked about, was our hop thing last week? It's like the most,
yeah,
it's hilarious to me that just the way people talk about the hop. So it's one of our videos that we posted on social media. I think it's like our best performing video from this show ever.
Yeah,
it's just
it's nuts.
Tons of comments talking about the hop. All right, so Alderman Spiker does not want this thing anymore, and he has made some interesting bedfellows in the pursuit to get rid of it.
He continues to keep going. Where we talked about it last time, I think, Kristen, you were off, and maybe Steve and I talked about, because this is now a weekly topic, at least until the end of budget season, is the city, if it shut down the hop, because it was funded with 70-some million dollars in federal grants, would owe a prorated portion of that back to the federal government. And that figure right now is about $48 million. And that alone seems to be enough to get most of his colleagues to be like, okay, we're going to keep doing this at least until that figure is a lot lower. And that's not true just of streetcars. If you were to demolish a highway before the grant terms were paid off, you would owe money back. That's true of all kinds of stuff. That's a big part of why the Couture has a streetcar in it, because there was a transit facility there and the Milwaukee County was going to owe money back to the federal government. So that kind of roadblock keeps federal government projects operating across the country. But Scott Spiker has a different idea. He's going to write a letter to U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy and say, hey, throw us a lifeline. He did this. He literally said, throw us a lifeline. That is 4.2 million that we cannot use next year to lower taxes and fees, keep our libraries open, repave our dilapidated local streets, or replace our aging vehicle fleet for our fire and police departments, he wrote to Duffy. Shortly after his letter was issued, Bob Donovan, who was an alderman who voted against the streetcar, is now a Republican state rep, and Van Wongard of Racine issued their own letter that referenced Spiker's letter and said, yeah, give this guy what he wants. Let Milwaukee out from under this albatross. And so both those letters suspiciously came out very close to one another. Mm. I actually spent most of the meeting, or most of the morning, in a meeting that Scott Walker... I am all over
Take
the place.
Take a breath.
That Scott Spiker kept going back and forth in and out of. I assume there's maybe some coordination that was happening there at that time. But we now have this request in the federal government.
Any indication on Sean Duffy's reaction?
I've never seen the federal government waive this requirement in lieu of not making another investment in transit.
All right, real quick.
Interesting. Yes, okay.
Real quick, yes or no. Has Mayor Johnson hired a new position called Hop Marketing Lead?
That might be in the budget. There's a new hop director.
So something they're looking for a PR hire or something?
They're bringing an outside contract in-house is what's happening.
All right, lots more to get to with Jeremy and Janine. UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find their great work. We can talk about the sprinkler bill and county budget woes all coming up.
Well, welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen, he's Steve, and we're still talking to our guy, Jeremy Janine, about all things Milwaukee. All right, moving from the city to the county, talking about the budget. What's the update there?
They're on the same timeline to approve a budget as the city of Milwaukee is. They have about a $47 million gap. The city is closing its $100 million gap, proposing to close it in a way that I don't think is going to be very noticeable to a lot of people, just small nips and tucks around the edges. The county, if you're a bus rider, it's going to be very noticeable to you. There's six routes being completely eliminated. Fares are increasing. The weekly, monthly fares are also increasing. And then a number of routes are having their frequency cut. So supervisors are debating, what can we do about this? We've talked about the city increasing its vehicle registration fee, its wheel tax, from $30 to $40 annually. Every $10 gets the city about $3 million more per year. So obviously can't close your whole budget gap though this way. MCTS alone, transit system, has a $14 million gap. The county also has a wheel tax, and supervisors are considering to close the entire gap. They could raise the wheel tax from $30 to $55, and that would fund the whole transit system as is.
Got it. All right. And where are we on ensuring people are actually paying when they get on the bus?
Supervisor Sean Rowland, who represents kind of the southeast corner of Wauwatosa, I think, to describe his district, has a $600,000 proposal. I would have to check Graham Kilmer's coverage if it's been approved. If it hasn't been approved, it's going to be approved. It would take some money from the sheriff's budget and allocate it to doing some fare enforcement on the buses. There's also the open...
Like physical people there to...
Yes.
Make sure you're paying?
Yeah, at least to ask.
So not a program or like a system, like people.
Yes. Okay. I had the rare occasion to take a bus across town yesterday, which I got to see demographically lots of different areas. And I was surprised. One, most people do pay. But there were a couple different times where I just watched someone walk right on and the driver do nothing, which is what they're told to do at the moment.
Fare evasion is the term that they use.
Yes, yeah. And this person was definitely evading it, although not with any resistance.
Yeah, I actually support the idea. I think we have to start doing something because some of the numbers you threw out a few weeks ago, and we're talking, what, 25% or more of the fares are not collected. That's a problem. That's a budget hole that you could fix with some adequate supervision. Now, whether that, you know, fixes the problem, I don't know. The wheel tax thing is very unpopular in the rest of the county outside of this part of the county. So I don't know if going from, what'd you say, it was 20 bucks, 25 bucks?
To 30 to 55. Yeah. So almost doubling it.
Yeah.
Another part of that proposal is, and this is something that I think governments will be looking at a lot more now that inflation is a hot topic again, indexing it to inflation so that they don't have to go every year and be like, okay, right. $10 increase, it'll go up by $2.32.
Didn't, you know, the gas tax been frozen forever. I mean, maybe if they would have done that, we'd have more funds available. That's a very unpopular idea as well. So I don't know if that's going to fly either.
Tax is ever popular?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
But there's certainly, I mean, the gas tax, I think that was a Jim Doyle era decision that they unindexed it to inflation. And yeah, it's been, I think, 16 cents in the state for forever.
All right, let's talk about, I don't know if it's evading, but parking meters, downtown parking meters.
I don't know that there's a lot of evasion that happens there until your tickets are issued. Then the city has a problem.
That's what I was talking about.
Collecting. But big changes, and take note if you're parking downtown to look closer at the hours. If you're going on the traditional 8 to 6 meters or 9 to 6 meters are on, it's now going to last until 9 p.m. And it's also going to include Saturday hours.
Mm.
I don't have the number in front of me actually of how much money that will generate. It's a couple million dollars. It's not a huge amount of money. And again, the parking revenue, parking citations, parking meters, parking garages, publicly owned parking garages, that's all part of the fund that pays the hop. It's also historically been a transfer to the general fund. So if you think about it, it's somewhat of a backdoor tax on suburbanites that drive downtown and park on the streets. But this change has already happened in the third ward. So if you're driving downtown and going out to eat in the third ward, pay special attention there. In a couple more weeks, it's supposed to be rolled out to the rest of downtown.
Mm.
It's something the council actually approved 2 years ago and then didn't get implemented by DPW. And you could look at that as perhaps a prime reason why the city's top parking official was replaced in the past year.
That's a good point.
Parking is always nightmarish in the third ward, isn't it?
And this is on top of the new initiative to, if you, when are the letters going out as far as you have more than 5 parking tickets? Here's your payment plan.
Yes, the HPV letters.
Yeah, when are those going
they
out?
They start being sent tomorrow.
Oh,
are you getting one?
No, because I don't ever get ticketed. This is the ongoing story. It's not that I have lots of parking tickets.
Mm-hmm.
It's that I don't pay the meter and then I don't get a ticket. So I am testing fate and it adds up in this one spot where I park that if I got the ticket, it basically would I just pay because it's like the back pay of what I didn't pay when I was at the meter.
There it is.
So this is a Kristen call to the Bond city to have more enforcement.
Mm.
And then I would start paying the meter.
And they do.
It's like Warren Buffett not paying his taxes.
They do.
Because he can.
Yeah, they do.
Or whatever that, you know, story.
They do anticipate issuing about 10% more tickets this year.
Yeah.
Which again, we went back to the parking official being changed over. The new official, Peter Knox, says that staffing is improving. There is a constant recruiting problem because it's not a very desirable job. And just to go back to the HPV tickets, those are 5 or more unpaid tickets. So if you get tickets and you pay them, the city will gladly take your money.
Yeah, that's not the issue.
But if you have 5 or more unpaid tickets, the city is going to not crack down on you. They're trying to be a little bit gentle, but they're going to more aggressively tow your car.
So I may have gotten maybe 2 in the last 20 years in the city of Milwaukee. And I'm instantly angry. Then I realize I probably misread the sign or something. I did something. And then I immediately pay it. That's how it should work. Little anger, get past it.
Realize it was your fault.
Little
take accountability.
Self-flagellation, if you want to use that term, and then do the right thing by paying your parking.
Well, especially because if you pay it right away, it's the cheapest it's going to be.
Yes,
financial advice.
How much does it escalate? Like it goes crazy right after a certain amount of time.
Oh, if you delay, it gets pretty big. The city also, I think it was last year, if not the year before, did increase a number of the fines, so the base price went up.
Yeah. So, you know, your whole business with you not paying, you know, because they're not catching you.
As soon as they start enforcing more often, I am a law-abiding citizen.
You're part of the problem.
You're just telling us how you work.
Yes. stretching the truth.
But I'm just saying, I mean, if I don't get a ticket, I don't get a ticket. Isn't that just risking fate?
That is risking fate, but that's also not law-abiding.
Yeah. No.
All right. Yeah. Made a tomato.
Don't try to stretch it like you're doing the right thing. You're not doing the right thing. All right. We got lots more to get to with Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com, after this on 620 WTMJ.
All right, we're continuing the conversation with Jeremy Janine from Urban Milwaukee. Let's go to
sidewalks. Let's talk sidewalks.
Okay. Sidewalks.
This is interesting.
Make it that interesting.
I will try. And it's a story of, I don't want to call it government innovation, but government efficiency, which are two words people often don't associate together. Mm. But the city replaces sidewalks when it rebuilds streets. And those are cost effective because you just do the whole street. You do all the sidewalk next to the street. And it's easy to do. What happens is when you get that crack sidewalk square, I think we've talked on the show, Kristen, you have a tree by your house that's uprooting.
Well, no, it did. And so now we have a new tree. But okay. They had to, when we first moved in, they redid our sidewalk because mm-hmm. the tree had, but like in my neighborhood in general, lots of uneven sidewalks because of
big trees.
Roots.
And so the challenge there, the city has hired a contractor for about $1 million a year to go out and fix those. But it's expensive on a per square basis because they're haphazardly having to go all over the city. And so what ended up happening, because to actually address all of that would take a lot more money, there's a 5-year backlog that if the sidewalk square in front of your house breaks, you can either pay to replace it yourself at an even greater price, or you can wait for the city to fix it and you'll pay, I think it's 50%.
Right.
But you'll be waiting at least 5 years to get it done. So Mullaly Coggs, she's kind of the queen of budget footnotes, which are budget amendments that don't actually have any fiscal impact. They're often just requested departments. Hey, go study this. In this case, she said, what about having like city employees do this instead of a contractor?
Mm-hmm.
And usually that very quickly ends up with, oh, that'd be more expensive. In this case, turns out it would be about the same price, but they could do, I think it's at least double the amount of work with it. So there's a 5-year backlog right now. At the rate they're expected to go, they could eliminate the backlog within 12 years using very conservative estimates, according to Kevin Muse, but at the same price, and the city would have a couple extra months a year to dedicate these employees in the winter to do something else.
And oh, by the way, a lot of suburbs already do that. They have their own employees doing this kind of work. So it's not like it's a brand new idea. I credit her for thinking about that because that is a way to get these things done quicker, which makes all of our walking paths much easier to navigate.
Especially, stroller man.
Ooh.
Those sidewalks are, and you have your coffee and then it goes all over the stroller and it's bumpity bump. Yeah, not good. All right. What's next?
We can do another real short one. We've talked a lot about breweries closing. One of those was 1840, an award-winning brewery that unfortunately met its demise with a health situation where the owner's wife, and the owner's wife was a key member of the business as well. This is in Bayview, and then they had a location in West Bend. She has a very bad form of cancer, but they filed for receivership. A sad story there, but with a happy ending, at least for fans of beer, because Solemn Oath Brewery, out of Chicago, and I believe Naperville is their other location, is going to take over the 1840 space in Bayview and continue kind of making high quality beer in a real craft microbrewery environment.
Audible cheer in the radio community when you say stuff like that. Brewery, Milwaukee, yay! All right, so when he's not engaged with his very busy social calendar, Fire Chief Aaron Lipsky is all over the sprinkler thing. We'll dive into that one. He's a busy guy, though, isn't he?
I saw him at the Third Street Market Hall.
Of course
this week.
You did.
He's wonderful.
He's everywhere. He is the best. That's why we love him. We'll talk about that with Jeremy Janine from UrbanMilwaukee.com after this. Final segment coming up. Love the music for this segment. Always good. Jeremy Janine in studio, as always, on Thursdays. One of our regular contributors to the program, talking about all things Milwaukee, politics, and more. All right, Chief Aaron Lipsky is all up in arms. Not a new thing. He's been talking about this issue for a long time. Sprinklers and how they're paid for. What's the latest on that?
So going back to set the stage for what this issue is, if the building was built before 1974, it's 60 feet or taller, built after 1974, it's required to have sprinklers. And I think three or more units also is required to have sprinklers. But what we saw on Mother's Day was a tragic fire on the Milwaukee's west side near 27th and Highland, where I believe it was 5 people died.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And there was a realization by a lot of new elected officials that, oh, we have this massive gap. And Aaron Lipsky, the fire chief, was really driving that. I'm like, if we have more sprinklers, people make it out of here. A lot more people make it out of here alive today. And that's a consistent theme that he's talked about for several years. We now have some proposed state legislation to try and do something about this. The key thing is the question of cost, that I think everyone agrees that sprinklers in apartment buildings would be a good thing. But how do you do that and at what cost? The legislation would make an incentive program with $10 million available at the state level for qualifying building owners to come get that money. It would also apply for DSPS, the state's kind of licensing department. It would give them authority to create a database. And what that would help, like the Milwaukee Fire Department, really highlight areas where there's not sprinklers, because they don't often know. They have to go through permit records after the fact. Mm. So you go, okay, in this area, there's not a lot of sprinklers. Maybe we can do some special incentives. And then there's another component of the bill, and that Graham Kilmer covered this for us, would allow cities and counties to establish their own requirements for sprinkler systems going forward. I assume that would be more restrictive than the state's, so requiring more sprinklers than the state does. Those things historically have had a challenge passing. There's a hope that this gets some bipartisan support, but even if it gets bipartisan support, I don't know that it's going to pass necessarily. Right now, State Senator Dora Drake, State Rep Margaret Arney, Mayor Cavalier Johnson are all backing this, the fire chief and alderpersons, Mullaly Coggs and Charlene Moore.
Doesn't matter anyone, but I support Mayor Lipsky on this issue. And frankly, if they would have done similar things with the lead pipes, we wouldn't be talking about that issue 30 years after first really raised.
No immediate Republican response or support?
Not immediately, but for a Milwaukee press conference, that's not necessarily unusual at this point.
All right. You wanted to remember a friend?
Yes. Tuesday will be the tragic anniversary of Jonathan Brostoff's suicide. He was a Milwaukee alderman and a good friend of mine. And I just want to take a moment of privilege to say, if you're having any mental health struggles, reach out to someone. Someone always wants you to be there tomorrow. And I would give almost anything to have Jonathan back tomorrow.
Important messaging. Yeah, it's always tough. I've also had friends in that same situation, not recently, thank God, but it's tough. And there's always resources, but you got to find them. You got to make that connection for people. There's always somebody willing to help if you make that connection. Jeremy will do it again next Thursday. Kristen will do it again tomorrow with the guys.
With the guys. I think both in studio.
Happy Halloween in advance. News is next, 620 WTMJ.